Hello, divers. Happy Halloween. Welcome to a special spooktastic installment of Mysteries of the Deep. I'm Tom Feeney, podcaster and purveyor of pop culture propaganda, searching beneath the surface of what seems to be the ordinary, the mundane, the pedestrian. This week, because it's Halloween, Mysteries of the Deep is diving into the terrifying, the hideous, the nightmarish world of copyright law. We ask the question, how did the original Night of the Living Dead lose its copyright? As you most likely already know, the 1968 film Night of the Living Dead is considered a classic of the horror genre. And even if you've never seen the movie, you surely know what it's all about. Those darned zombies! Now, before we dig into this particular rabbit hole, or grave if you will, let's enjoy a brief history lesson. The term zombie comes from Haitian folklore. It refers to a reanimated corpse that is brought back via some kind of dark magic or voodoo. Zombies in cinema predates Night of the Living Dead by, about 35 years. The first theatrical motion picture to feature zombies was 1932's White Zombie, starring horror icon Bela Lugosi as the zombie master named Murder Legendre. He uses his voodoo magic to turn the unwilling into his mindless servants.
From Haiti, land of the voodoo, comes the most infamous cult of all. Bela Lugosi as Murder Legendre.
I see death.
Master of the undead damned. The sinister power behind the White Zombie.
Zombies? Yes. They are my servants.
This soul killer takes men from their graves to be his slaves. His instruments of terror, and now this fiend plots to possess a woman, captive in the borderland between life and death. Her brain drained of the life spark. The white zombie obeys the unholy commands of her demon master. As mindless creatures carry out his cursed will, terror explodes in horror and heartquake.
Zombie! Allez vite! Allez!
Never eyes so evil, never powers so potent, never magic so black, Bela Dracula Lugosi, as the master of the White Zombie.
Of course, this film does not present zombies as being undead, just put into a kind of trance where they are highly suggestible. White Zombie was followed a decade later by King of the Zombies and I Walked with a Zombie. In the 1950s, you had movies like Voodoo Island and Zombies of Mora Tau. And last, but certainly not least, the early 60s gave us the non-classic, the incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed-up zombies. Of course, all these films dealt with zombies that were reanimated by mystical means. They don't resemble the shambling, cannibalistic creatures we see today. and what film brought us into the era of the modern zombie? Yep, Night of the Living Dead. During the 1960s, George A. Romero was a successful director and producer. He co-founded a production company called The Latent Image that made television commercials and industrial films. But Romero and his partners grew restless for doing creative work for other people. They wanted to make something more substantial. They wanted to make a movie. In the late 1960s, the motion picture industry was in the midst of a cultural upheaval, as was the rest of the United States. A growing sense of permissiveness in American society began to filter through its popular culture. Music, journalism, art, and yes, the movies were all impacted by this societal shockwave. For George A. Romero and company, that meant they could make a film that pushed boundaries, but could also be commercially successful. So naturally, they wanted to make a horror movie. After throwing around a few different ideas, including one where teenage aliens come to Earth to hang out with human teens, Romero went with a tried and true idea. Borrow from someone else's work. That someone was author Richard Matheson. If you don't know the name, you'll know his work. Matheson wrote over a dozen episodes of The Twilight Zone and has had his novels made into many feature films, including The Incredible Shrinking Man, What Dreams May Come, and I Am Legend, starring Will Smith. And that takes us back to George Romero. I Am Legend, Matheson's 1954 novel about a plague that infects most of Earth's population, turning them into sort of zombie vampires. Romero admittedly used this as inspiration for Night of the Living Dead. The film revolves around a group of strangers who have barricaded themselves inside a rural farmhouse to avoid being attacked and, yes, eaten by ravenous undead people. Mind you, they were never referred to as zombies in the film. Romero called them ghouls. These reanimated corpses do not seem to possess any memories of their former lives, but only a rudimentary intelligence and an insatiable hunger for living human flesh.
Welcome to a night of total terror. Night of the living dead, the dead who live on living flesh, the dead whose haunted souls hunt the living whose bodies are the only food for these ungodly creatures. Night of the living dead. Bizarre adventure in fear. An experience in shock more shattering than your strangest nightmare. Night of the living dead. A night with the dead who cannot die. A night of total terror. Night of the Living Dead.
Romero and his filmmaking crew were based in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area, so this was certainly not going to be a Hollywood-style production, a fact reflected in the film's budget, somewhere around $115,000. The film would be shot in less expensive black and white, which would give it an almost retro 50s monster movie quality. It also allowed the production to use Bosco chocolate syrup in place of stage blood for the gorier scenes. It was, for most of the locally sourced cast and crew, their first experience making a feature film. There was one actor whose casting would have a profound effect on the film and how it was received. The male lead, named Ben, was the calm, composed voice of reason during the movie, while all hell was literally breaking loose around him and his compatriots. The role was originally written as a stereotypical, uneducated, blue-collar truck driver. However, that changed when Romero found the perfect actor to play Ben, 31-year-old Dwayne Jones. However, Jones was far removed from the character in the script. For one thing, Jones was a well-educated painter, writer, and musician who studied in Paris and was working towards a master's degree at NYU. He was also African-American. In the 1960s, it was incredibly rare to have a black lead actor in a film that wasn't specifically written for a black actor. Romero simply felt Jones was the best person for the role. However, that wasn't the only change that was made due to Jones' casting. The dialogue was written for that trucker stereotype. Jones wasn't having any of that. Without changing the script, Jones played the character of Ben as a resourceful, if flawed, everyman. And no mention of race was included in the script. It was one of the first cases of truly colorblind casting. However, Dwayne Jones' inclusion in Night of the Living Dead was in its own way revolutionary. It gave the film an unexpected subtext and edge that no doubt helped it gain its well-deserved reputation as a modern, relevant work of filmmakers far from the Hollywood machine. Many saw it as a work of subversive art, masquerading as a B-horror movie. The seemingly endless procession of the undead could be interpreted as allegory for America's growing involvement in the Vietnam War, a war against a seemingly unrelenting foe. The film was also seen as a rebuke of local and state government civil defense planning. They are portrayed as being ill-prepared and ineffectual against this new threat. Once the film was completed, an even more daunting task awaited director Romero. Convincing a small distributor to get the film into drive-in theaters, remember those, and make some quick cash to put back into Romero's fledgling production company. You see, Night of the Living Dead wasn't meant to change the landscape of American horror. It was meant to, hopefully, drum up some quick income so Romero and company could move on to bigger and better things. Now here's an important bit of trivia for you. Night of the Living Dead was not the film's original title. There were a couple of those. There was Night of Anubis and also Night of the Flesh Eaters. Why is that important? Well, that will become clear shortly. With the completed film in hand, Romero put the film cans in the trunk of his car and drove to New York City to find someone willing to show his film. He found a taker in a company called Continental Releasing, a small art house distributor known for its relatively highbrow independent films. Almost immediately, the film courted controversy. Its grim story, grisly scenes of ghouls eating human flesh, and its downbeat ending drew the ire of many in the film industry, including movie critics. One quote in a 1968 issue of Variety said, "Night of the Living Dead cast serious aspersions on the integrity and social responsibility of the filmmakers, the distributor, the film industry as a whole, and any theater who books the picture." But at the end of it all, Night of the Living Dead was just plain scary. To an audience that hadn't seen anything like it before, it was both shocking and salacious. Remember, this was 1968. There was no formal movie rating system at the time. No warning for parents, no restrictions on ticket sales. And amazingly, when the movie was first released, it was shown as part of a Saturday matinee double feature, alongside classic and decidedly more tame horror movies. Kids of any age could go see Night of the Living Dead. However, once word got out, that didn't last long. The film became one of the first so-called cult films to have exclusive midnight screenings in major cities. Now, there are many stories of movies that were unsuccessful during their original theatrical runs, only to become classics after time passes and tastes change. Was that the case with Night of the Living Dead? Actually, no. During its initial theatrical release, Night of the Living Dead grossed $12 million domestically and $18 million internationally. In other words, it made more than 250 times its budget and became one of the most profitable film productions ever made. And everyone lived happily ever after, right? No. As I said before, when George A. Romero made the movie, the original title was Night of Anubis. When Romero realized that no one would understand that reference, it was changed to Night of the Flesh Eaters. That name was changed to Night of the Living Dead just before it was released. Now, according to the Library of Congress, a new title card was created and added at the beginning of the movie that said, Night of the Living Dead. Seems pretty straightforward, right? But Continental Distributing forgot to include one small yet important detail, the copyright notice. You see, the 1909 Film Copyright Act said that the first public showing of your work must have the film copyright symbol or abbreviation of copyright and the year of production, or else you've lost the right of ownership forever. So the moment Night of the Living Dead was shown to a paying audience, it was also going directly into the public domain. Oops. So just try to imagine the amount of money this ultimately cost George Romero and company. Literally, no one would have been able to use the concept of flesh-eating zombies without Romero getting a cut of the profits. That's like losing your winning Powerball lottery ticket. It also left the door wide open for other entities to swoop in and try to cash in on the movie's success. How? Well, when an artist's work is on the public domain, that means there is no protection for that artwork, and anyone can copy it and release it. And that has happened a lot. In the recent book Night of the Living Tapes, the official home video history of Night of the Living Dead, author and collector Jeff Turner owns over 200 different releases of the film on both VHS and Betamax tapes. And that's not mentioning the countless other formats like 16mm film, Laserdisc, DVD, and Blu-ray. It seemed like every cut-rate tape company released their own copy of Night of the Living Dead. Most of them really poor copies. But the many, many tapes that were being sold meant that more people got to see it, and that actually helped cement the film as a true classic. And for a long time, it seemed like Night of the Living Dead would be relegated to the bargain basement 99-cent bin at your local Blockbuster video. That was until 1993. Two guys working in the laser disc distribution business wanted to see an actually good copy of Night of the Living Dead, but none were available. So they formed their own company, Elite Entertainment, to do just that. The following year, they released their updated, improved version of the film on Laserdisc. It was the first such attempt at a restoration, but it wouldn't be the last. Of course, there are other things you can do to a film besides restoring it, mostly bad things. There was a period during the 1980s where colorization of black and white films was all the rage. And by that I mean, filmmakers were raging against it. Attempts to colorize movies back then were awful. Colorizing the actors left them looking pasty or sickly green. That's bad for living actors, but what about zombies? I mean, they're supposed to look that way. So in 1986, the Hal Roach Studio released a colorized version of Night of the Living Dead. It's not good, and it's certainly not an improvement. If you're curious, you can see the colorized version for free on YouTube. And there are, of course, remakes of the original. In 1990, an updated Night of the Living Dead was released. It had an updated script, a bigger budget, and much better practical effects. It also had something else in common with the original. George A. Romero, who served as executive producer.
They came to pay their respects.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Why do you have to be so cruel?
What?
Show some respect.
Now, they're running for their lives.
A biologist in Stockton, California have released reports focusing on the phenomenon, specifically on that trance-like state.
Every shelter is becoming a trap.
Are you sure we're gonna be all right?
Cooper, you gotta help me out!
And every road out...
Don't stop no matter what happens.
...is just another dead end.
They're coming right for us!
George Romero's Night of the Living Dead.
Why would Romero go back to remaking a classic? His classic. Money. He wanted to pay back the original investors from the 1968 film who lost their money because of the copyright screw-up. The remake, which was directed by special effects master Tom Savini, was a worthy update to the original, with few twists and turns of its own. That remake is available to rent on Prime Video for about $3. In 2006, another remake tried to take a bite out of the zombie classic and take advantage of the mid-2000s revival of 3D with, you guessed it, Night of the Living Dead 3D. This remake was also all about the money, but not in a good way. Mostly it's just boring and headache-inducing. It's also on Prime Video and Apple TV for $3.99, which is about $3.98 more than I'd care to spend. Now, trying to list all the versions, remakes, reboots, and reimaginings of Night of the Living Dead would require hours as well as the rest of my sanity, so I will highlight just two more that I think are worth mentioning. In 2009, over 100 artists contributed to a truly fascinating experiment, an animated version of Night of the Living Dead. Using the original audio from the film, the artists employed numerous techniques to animate different parts of the film. From traditional animation, stop motion, CGI, claymation, and even sock puppets were used to recreate scenes. It's a totally unique and fascinating approach to have fans of the original get the opportunity to showcase their talents and pay homage to a classic. Night of the Living Dead Reanimated can be seen for free on the Tubi and Vudu streaming platforms. Now, the second version I want to showcase takes the opposite approach. The visuals are untouched, but the soundtrack is, well, something completely different. Night of the British Dead.
What do you get if you take a classic zombie movie and give it an entirely new comedy soundtrack?
Then we can all leave.
Oh, I'd like to leave. Yes.
Then we can have olives.
Oh, I'd like olives. Yes.
Across the world, the shocking barbarism which is sweeping our own nation is being committed by creatures who feast upon the flesh of their victims. First eyewitness accounts of this ghastly development came from people who were understandably frightened and almost incontinent.
We must get out of here. We have to get to a shopping mall. Maybe that's a different movie.
Researchers at Porton Down have disclosed that a monster can be killed by a shot in the head or a heavy blow to the skull.
Who have you come as? You're a coward! Not today, thank you. This has to be a Tuesday. I bloody hate Tuesdays.
so, the military and law enforcement are having a whale of a time shooting people that they wouldn't, in normal circumstances, be allowed to shoot.
We've a bet on who was splattered the most. Lenny was drenched in body parts. Hilarious.
And we've just received a text message from a Ben and Barbara, who were held up in a farmhouse somewhere. They're doing all right.
Hey, that's us. We're doing all right.
It's hard for us here to believe what we're reporting to you, but we do seem to be f***ed.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Night of the British Dead, coming soon to a screen near you. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Sorry. Skin that feels like leather by, rotting all together by the sea.
Yes, it's silly, but it's also kind of genius. So if you want to check out Night of the British Dead, it's available on Tubi for the low, low price of free. Watch it with a nice cup of tea and some finger sandwiches. As the technology to digitally restore the visual and audio quality of motion pictures became more advanced, opportunities to do so for Night of the Living Dead were explored. The most recent and best of these is a 4K restoration supported by the Museum of Modern Art and produced by Criterion. It is incredible. The level of detail previously unseen in other versions is astounding. The black and white contrast is perfectly balanced, and the restored soundtrack is crisp and clear. This is the version you want to watch Halloween night. And you can on HBO Max and on the Criterion streaming service. Much like the shuffling, mindless undead that stalk the living, Night of the Living Dead keeps coming back again and again. Its influence on cinema cannot be overstated. I mean, 11 seasons of the misery porn show called The Walking Dead can attest to that. That's it for this special episode of Mysteries of the Deep. Until next time, happy Halloween. Thanks for listening. If this is the first time you've heard this podcast, check out our past episodes and subscribe so you don't miss a single one. And we want to hear from you. Drop us a line at thedeepdivepodcast@gmail.com or on our Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter feeds. You can find links to those on our Linktree site, The Deep Dive Podcast by Automaton. And don't forget to check out our official website, thedeepdivepodcast.com. All clips used in this podcast are meant for educational purposes only and not to infringe on existing copyrights. Mysteries of the Deep is a production of Automaton Studios.